Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Today is Tuesday. That means Roger Sales is supposed to be here calling in from Argentina. We will contact Roger shortly. First, we'll do the market report for, what is today, Tuesday the 19th of March, year of our Lord, 2013. Gold is up another $6.80 today. It was up 12, 15 bucks yesterday, $6 today. These are good signs. Gold has breached the 1600 mark. Some people have described that as an important psychological barrier. I don't believe that myself. I think if there was any important barrier, it was about 1575. And the next important barrier is perhaps 1700, the way I'd look at it. We'll watch and see if we can, how fast we can reach 1700. But we can be encouraged that for a moment at least, it looks like gold is starting to jump. We'll watch and see if that holds true. Silver's flat, $28.90 per ounce, same as it was yesterday. Hasn't gone, it's not currently up or down. Platinum's off 21 bucks, $1,554 an ounce. I don't know if I gave the price for gold. It was $1,612.60 per ounce. Platinum again is down 21 bucks. Palladium's down $28. And this is, we mentioned this yesterday. Both platinum and palladium were down while gold and silver were up. Today, gold is up, silver is flat, but again, platinum and palladium are down. As Melody pointed out yesterday, these are industrial metals. The monetary metals are up, at least gold is. Silver is flat, hasn't gone down. I don't know if that, you know, is that coincidence or does it have deep meaning? We will talk to Roger about things with deep meaning in a couple of moments here. So, Roger, if you're listening, you'd be prepared because we're going to do some deep thinking here in a little while. But let's finish with the equities market. Dow Jones is down 7 points to 14,445. NASDAQ is off 14 points, 3,234. New York Stock Exchange is down 43 points to 9,003. U.S. dollar index is up 0.25. 82.88. The crude oil is off $1.56 to $92.18 per barrel. What's it all mean? It means that some people made money today and some people didn't. That's what it means, Roger. Do you have deeper meaning?
Man, you threw down the gauntlet on me here today. I'm just tickled to see gold above $1,600 and climbing like it has since this Cyprus thing blew in over the weekend. And some of the articles I've been reading today and yesterday from people the likes of Jim Sinclair, who's got a pedigree about as long as your arm, he said is going to quickly shoot up to 1900. And once that happens, I think, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, today, some of his feelings kind of echoed some of the things that I've been feeling. And his synopsis in that article, it's over on King World News today. There's two from him, one today and one yesterday. They're extremely insightful, by the way. When you take someone with his experience and understanding and knowledge and connections, and he lays some of this stuff out there, it's pretty insightful. One of the things that he said was that this little thing that they've pulled with Cyprus is going to be the termination of their paper game, and that we should be seeing the whole gold market shift over into the cash for physical metals game, and that's going to kill their paper game, because then they got to stand and deliver on all these shorts. And they pooped in their mess kit, it appears to me, on this Cyprus thing.
Well, it's hard to say, but everybody's leaping in here, and I'm wondering myself, is this as serious as some people suppose, or is it much ado about nothing? We have certainly seen a host. I mean, everybody's piling on, and Cyprus can mean anything from, they made a mistake, to, oh my gosh, it's an attack by the International Monetary Fund on Russian crime syndicates and Russian mafia and Russian, there's a mass of both conspiracy theories and more secular explanations. And I'm wondering when we're going to figure out what the truth is on this. What is the real impact? Is this a flash in the pan, or do you think this is going to have impact? Will we still be talking about Cyprus next week?
Well, let's go back and study our enemy. We've spent years studying our enemy, and we know that they've got MOs, and we know that they repeat, all right? So one of the things, if you've studied them for any length of time, you easily can see that any initiative that they take never accomplishes or is meant to accomplish just one thing. They always have multiple objectives in there. For instance, when Oklahoma City and the Murrah building went down, I know it was just coincidence that all the Waco records were shipped up there a couple of weeks before that. Okay, where you've got all of the Building 7 goes down, and all of the Wall Street prosecutions that have been going on were over there in Building 7. Well, I'm sorry, those went down with Building 7. We can't do anything about that. So, they pull multiple objectives. The thing that I'm thinking is this. Everybody pretty well has a consensus that all of their financial debauchery games always lead up to a war, right? And it seems to me they're backed into a corner real tight on the financial stuff right now.
Who do you mean by they are backed up?
The people that pull all this stuff, that control the world, the 15 families, 20 families.
Okay, I get you. All right.
Whatever label you want to put on them, they've got a situation where they haven't been able to get Iran started. They're trying to do something in Syria because Iran and Syria are proxies and tied together. Syria's right there close to Israel and has defeated them in the past. They're a huge threat. Obviously, they're trying to go in there with all of their clandestine resources and take over that country for the last year, similar to the way they did Iraq, no matter what label they put on it, Syrian Freedom Force or whatever. By the way, the guy they just elected, I think, last night to head these rebel forces, just so happens he spent the last two or three decades in the United States, and his children and wife are over there. So they've got that situation, and Russia, as it says in that Sinclair article today, anytime you deal, when you deal with a lot of people in business, you're dealing with, let's say, the Caymans or Switzerland or Liechtenstein or Andorra or one of the traditional tax havens. He said when you deal with Russians, you deal with Cyprus. So all of their stuff goes through Cyprus.
Now, I'll tell you what. Wait a second, Roger. You know, there may be some people who don't really know. We didn't really specify what the Cyprus situation is when we started explaining. Why don't you give people, before we go further into what it may mean, why don't you give people an illustration? Just tell them, what are we talking about when we're talking about Cyprus right now?
Well, in case any of our listeners, who I kind of take for granted are above the cut, but in case any of them are just, you know, coming out of a cave since the weekend, over the weekend, Cyprus, a very small percentage of the EU, like 0.02 of the EU's GDP, they went in and took the new president, who'd said he was having none of this amnesty or what they've been doing in Greece.
Austerity
is the word I want. None of this austerity when he was elected two or three weeks ago, and that was the platform. And then he comes in and makes this announcement over the weekend on Saturday. Of course, they always do things on Saturday. That any money in the Cyprian banks, if you've got so much over, I forget what the
had less than 100,000 euros, there would be a new tax imposed of 6.75%.
Yeah,
and if you had over 100,000 euros, this would translate into something like 125,000 American dollars. They were going to take 10%.
Right. Well, you know, I like what they've done with what they're calling it. You know, they're not calling it a bailout; they're calling it a bail-in,
and they're not calling it a robbery either.
Right? That's right.
This is the great thing about being government. This is where you define your terms.
See, well, there you go, man. Our comments.
I'm not stealing your money with this. This is a tax. This isn't a bailout. It's a bail-in.
Thought a tax was stealing your money too, but anyway, so that's the scenario on Cyprus, and of course they did it over the weekend. Many people saw that picture of one of the guys that had deposits in the bank pulled his bulldozer up and parked it in front of the bank over the weekend. So they got some pretty irate people over there,
it goes much deeper than that. It's not just the locals that are irate.
No.
As you were explaining, Russia has come to be a dominant influence in Cypriot banks, and they have been moving masses of money. I've seen one report, and I don't remember whose it was. They are calculating that they're going to capture $13 billion out of the Cypriot banks, and he's saying that's a bunch of bunk. Now, I'm meaning there's $130 billion altogether, and they're going to take 10% of that. There are individual Russian investors that have more than $100 billion each in Cyprus. Well, I don't know what the truth is.
Well, now and that was in the Sinclair article. He said what they're reporting is a drop in the bucket. And you're not talking about just Russian businessmen. You're talking about KGB, and now you're including Putin. Okay, and now you're including some sort of a funnel that they funnel a great deal of their finances through to help support Syria in this fight against what the U.S. and Israel and France and all of the NATO stuff is doing clandestinely over there. So is that not the reason that they picked little old Cyprus? And we don't know, but we know one thing. Traditionally, when they get their backs in a corner financially, they always want to start a world war, and it's always bailed them out in the past, and they always repeat. So, to me, that's got to have something to do with it, because I'm much more geopolitically oriented in this, in my scope over the last number of years, because I'm fascinated by it.
Well, we have heard persistent talk about currency wars over the last 60, 90 days. It's going on. We had currency wars that were obvious and overt back over the last several years, died out for a while. Now there's talk that currency wars will burst into flame again. And the whole idea of currency war is simply that each nation will inflate its currency to try to prove that its currency is worth less than the other nation's currencies. And if it is, if we can prove our dollar is worth less than the Canadian dollar, then we can export more goods.
Yeah, they can pay their workers.
I have debates about this. Go ahead.
Well, they can pay their workers in cheaper value currency, and when
that's
they export
exactly right.
The stuff, they're exporting it to a better currency, so they come out on the head end, and everybody is in a race to the bottom and inflating their currency to try and keep up with what little trade's going on out there to capture it.
Well, one of the points about it is, who is the fundamental victim? If the United States engages in currency war by inflating the currency to try to make the dollar worth less, who is the victim of this war?
Well, I think you go back to Keynes. The surest way to rip the citizens off is to inflate the currency.
Debauch the currency. Exactly.
Absolutely.
But what I'm getting to is, when China engages in currency war, they say, ha-ha, we're fighting the dreaded evil imperialists over there in America. And we get into currency war and we say, ha-ha, we are fighting the dreaded Japanese who are reducing the value of their currency. We call it a war as if we're fighting some foreign adversary, but the truth is, the only victims of this war are our own people.
Sure.
By diminishing the value of the American dollar, we are causing people who were making $25 an hour, now they're effectively making $20 an hour. All right? If we had a 20%, they're taking the loss. The war, the currency war, is directed really against the nation's people, and particularly against the nation's creditors. That's who the currency wars are. Now, a question I've got: we have currency war up until now that's been fought merely with inflation. Are we seeing a new kind of currency war in Cyprus, where a financial attack is being launched on Russians, important Russians, wealthy Russians, corrupt Russians, powerful Russians, whatever, but Russians who've put their big bucks in a little island called Cyprus? Is this currency war, this just normal run-of-the-mill theft? What do you think we've got here?
I think you've got a situation where they're trying to do something with Syria, like I said, and they also use Cyprus as a beta test. They're going to go in and see if they can do that and how the people react. And, you know, the people may not have reacted to some stuff lately. And, of course, we're not talking about Americans. But over there in Europe, they've gotten a pretty good reaction out of this, a pretty good negative reaction. And it has filtered over into America. I would love to know what the banks in the United States experienced yesterday.
You mean in terms of withdrawals?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our people, and why would they do that?
Because
why would there be an increased withdrawal here in the States or anywhere based on what we've seen in Cyprus?
Well, let me give you an example. I got a guy that's a friend of mine who's got close to $500,000 sitting in the Bank of America. All right. Now, why that he's got it there, I have no idea, but that's the fact of the matter. And I wrote him an email Sunday night, and I said, if you're not down there Monday and talking to them about getting that stuff out of there, I'm going to put a mirror under your nose and see if you can still frost it.
Well, the point is that we've got people with big dollars, and they've just been robbed of 10% of their wealth in Cyprus, and no one is complaining that this might be illegal. It casts doubt. It's evidence that if billionaires aren't safe in Cyprus, are you safe investing or depositing your wealth in New York City or Houston or Spokane, Washington?
Or GLD or SLV.
Yeah, it casts doubt. I mean, when you put a fiat monetary system together, what's the most important ingredient, Roger?
Trust.
Public confidence. They've got to believe that if they put it in the bank, they can get it out. This is an illustration where billionaires aren't getting all their money. And if they took 10% today, what makes anyone think they aren't going to take another 10% a month from now or six months from now?
Did you read some of the articles? You know, they didn't want 10%. Evidently, the IMF initially wanted 40%.
Now, imagine
that. Oh, yeah, it's been reported several places.
Well, that's just war. You can debate about 10% and 7%. That's a nice hit. I mean, no one wants it, and no one can easily afford it, but a billionaire, I don't know. All right, he got clipped for 10%. You know, I'm not going to weep. I'm not going to weep if a billionaire loses 10%. It makes a lot of difference to a small person, but 40% is, that's war. That's not a debatable issue. It's not It can't be easily survived. We'll talk more about this in just a moment. We'll talk more about Cyprus. Here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival, I'm Alfred Addis. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Roger Sales. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. You know, we talked at the beginning of the program, some people say the 1600 mark was an important psychological barrier. I don't agree with that, but I do think that the 1575 was an important technical barrier. If we dropped down below 1575, I don't know, we might have seen something strange happen. Insofar as it appears that we've tested that limit, it's been found stable. It does appear that we've seen a bottom in gold, and we are likely to see gold increase over the coming months and years. Implication: you're down close to the lowest you're likely to see gold in the foreseeable future. We can't tell you that's God's truth, but it appears probable. If that's the case, now's a good time. Give Melody Cedarstrom a call, 1-800-375-4188. Discount Gold and Silver. Roger, we're talking about Cyprus and the significance of the Cypriot government claiming that they're entitled to take 6.7% of everything, 6.75% of whatever funds are in there in the banks, Cypriot banks, below 100,000, and 10% of anything above 100,000. And let's get clear about this. This, what is the purpose for this, Roger? Do you understand the purpose for taking this money from the depositors?
Well, so, you want to talk about the surface purposes or the underneath?
Yeah, the one that's expressed.
Talking about.
I have an answer here from the newspaper, but I just wanted to see if you had a quick. What's the fundamental excuse du jour?
Well, basically do the same thing there. You know, try and bail them out of the EU and the.
They want the depositors to help pay for part of an international bailout.
Yeah,
and the reason they are bailing these people out is what?
Because they want them to pay for the bogus paper they hung on them.
They can't pay the debt. They can't pay the alleged debt that's been attached to Cyprus. They
with
can't pay the debt, and
with
anything. I don't care, corn cobs or whatever. But they're trying to impose the cost of that debt on the depositors. And reason I'm bringing that up is to remind people who is the biggest debtor nation in the world. It's the United States. Hail to the chief. Frank, can we play Hail to the Chief? Do we have Hail to the Chief that we could play instantly on that? We'll probably let that slide. But the point is,
that may
what
be
they're doing
new
in
opening.
Cyprus could happen here also, and for a similar reason.
That may be your new opening theme song, Al.
We'll have to talk to Frank. And if, I don't know. I understand that Frank has a kazoo. Frank, can you play Hail to the Chief on a kazoo? I think that would make perfect bumper music for programs that are a little bit critical of what's going on in government. The point to all of this is that Cyprus, is it an isolated event? Well, I mean, one of the points, not the only point. Is it an isolated event, or is it an illustration of things that can happen in other nations, maybe a lot of nations, maybe even our own nation as well? What do you think?
I think if I lived in Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, or the UK or France, I'd be real nervous if I had money in the bank.
Mm-hmm. You don't see any problem.
If I had it in the U.S., I'd be real nervous too. You know, Al, this brings up something I've wanted to talk about for a while, and that is something I read years ago about how these guys operate when we talk about their MO and what they do. And one, of course, trade is beneficial to both parties when it's legitimate trade, okay? But we know how these people twist and turn stuff and use it to their diabolical advantage. And the reason that they like to do trade treaties is because once you have a trade treaty with another country, then you've got to start meshing the laws so that both countries' laws intermesh to some point to facilitate the trade in the treaty, and that lays the foundations for the countries to be merged.
True. But we have a certain amount of resistance to merger also. And what I mean by that is this. Let's suppose I build automobiles and you build computers. And I'd like to buy some of your computers and you'd like to have one or more of my automobiles. And we cut a deal. All right? You assemble 50 or 100 computers and I assemble one automobile and we swap them out. All right? That's trade. That makes good sense. It's logical. It's the way people think about it. But let's suppose you have a business in Argentina where you are paying your help a couple dollars an hour to make computers, and I'm up here in Illinois, or Oregon now, building automobiles, where I'm paying my help $20 an hour. It is a great advantage to you to be able to trade your computers, which you can build on the cheap, to me, which I have for my car, which I have to pay for, with reasonably high labor rates, and you stand to make a great profit. We're no longer involved in simple trade where you carve an axe, or you make an axe out of a stone, and I make a spear out of a stick and a pointed rock and rest, that sort of thing. It's not just person to person trade. When you when you get one country and another country, somebody can make a lot of money manufacturing computers in Argentina, for example, or China or wherever, and manufacturing them cheap, selling them some other country where they pay high, and the profit potential is enormous. And the point I'm trying to get to is this profit potential, if the two nations were fully merged, that profit potential might not exist. Do you see what
Correct.
I'm saying?
This is what we were touching on a couple of weeks ago when I used that, you know, $10 word arbitrage. And basically all global trade, free trade, it is arbitraging labor. And that just means exactly what you laid out in your hypothetical example. You're pitting one highly paid group of workers against a very poorly paid group of workers, and you're benefiting from it.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. See, the other, if you and I, you're making axes and I'm making spears. All right, the axe and the spear, we swap that right there in our local community. And everybody kind of benefits from that trade. You, me, your family, my family, whatever, everybody's kind of benefiting. But when we start trading and you're down in Argentina and I'm up here in the States and we start trading, somebody's taking it in the neck. Huh?
Well, take that example and look at it another way, and I think this is something everybody... healthy little town, and put a Walmart in there where at the end of the day they take all the money in the town that's been spent there that day and ship it to Bentonville, Arkansas.
Exactly. I understand. You know what the richest community in any state typically is? It's the state capital. Yeah, that's what it is. Because they are taxing, they're drawing taxes from the entire state that go to the state capital, and it winds up they have a higher standard of living in virtually every state capital than they do in any other cities or communities in the state. And the same thing is roughly true for national capital. They have a high standard of living because they're pulling all that money in, and it filters out to the people that work there. It makes a difference to their economy, and it's just evidence of what happens. If you can pull that money in from outside your economy, you can get rich.
You know, Al, years ago, this is probably 20 years before I got into this stuff a little bit, so it's over 20 years ago, I had an occasion and an opportunity to go up to D.C. from Atlanta and go to the National Association of Broadcasters Convention up there. It was held in D.C. that year. I got to see Paul Harvey speak actually in person to the broadcasters right before he died. It was really an honor to do that. But I was riding on the plane up there next to I don't know if he was a lawyer or a lobbyist or whatever he was, but he was somebody that was from Atlanta that lived in D.C., and he was going back, and we were talking economic stuff, and he turned to me and he said, "This place is recession proof." Exactly what you said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'll never happen, and it'll never happen in Washington, D.C. They take care of their own. That's what, and it's unfortunate, and it's sad because it creates a disconnect. You know, if congressmen had to suffer as much financial abuse as the average citizen does when we go into a depression. Or a recession, we'd have a lot stronger economy. For example, I think congressmen,
we'd have
senators,
we'd
presidents,
have a lot stronger Congress too.
They should be paid their paychecks should be directly proportional to a legitimate calculation. What is the average individual standard of living? When the average man in this country is making $50,000 a year, okay. The congressman is, let's say he's entitled to make $250,000 a year. He gets five times average. We go into a recession, and the average man's pay falls to $30,000 a year. Guess what? The average congressman's pay has declined proportionally. And it will continue to decline until the Congress figures out what to do that restores prosperity for everybody, not just themselves. You see what I'm saying there, Roger?
Sure do, man.
Pay them in proportion.
Switch topics.
Go ahead.
I want to bring something up that I saw. Drudge was target rich last night. You know, there's so darn much going on. It's very difficult to keep up with it all.
No, you can't. No one can.
There's a gun show out in California, I guess, the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And the lines for ammunition were wrapped around the block.
No, I know. I saw Go ahead.
The story, one of the guys said, I got there at 5:45 in the morning, and I was 35th in line and had to wait a couple hours to get in.
Well, there were video reports, I think it was in San Diego Gun Show about 10 days ago. They had lines a mile and a half long to get into the building. I don't think Michael Jackson ever had lines a mile and a half long to see him perform. You understand?
Yeah.
And I guarantee you there's no mile and a half lines to get into a Democrat convention or Republican convention.
Listen, everybody, if you're on your computer and you want to see a great picture of somebody I know y'all just absolutely love is Dianne Feinstein, go to Drudge and look at the picture of her that's on there right now. It is anything but flattering. And the headline says Feinstein foiled, and I don't know what that means yet, so I haven't pulled up the article. But just the picture is worth 1,000 words, man. So obviously it's something bad. It means we'll all be happy about it. No assault weapons ban. No assault weapons ban, not even in the Dems bill. That's the headline.
Well, that's superb. And it's just what is so disgusting about the assault weapons ban.
This is a big loss for them, Al.
Of course it's a big
loss for them right here. This is huge, okay?
Yeah. But it was so stupid because an assault weapon is a military-style weapon that can fire one bullet at a time, semi-automatic. Every time you pull the trigger, you fire one. You can set it for a burst of three. You pull the trigger, it'll fire three rounds, bang, bang, bang. Or you can put it on full automatic and brr, brr, brr. That's an assault rifle. What they are complaining about in this country are merely semi-automatic weapons. And they part of their description of assault rifles if they had a pistol handle on them. It had nothing to do. They don't fire three bullets at a time. They don't go full automatic. They are just semi-automatic rifles. And they tried to take them off the street anyway, and it was because they have a pistol grip on them, for God's sake.
What do you think about these guys that are coming up with the computer programs where you can print your guns?
Oh, I think it's superb. You know, I have one of the blanks. You can buy lower receivers.
Yes.
Or AR-15s that are 80% complete. And by law, the lower receiver, the part that contains the trigger mechanism, not the barrel, not the upper receiver, the lower receiver where you'll insert the magazine and where you have the trigger mechanism, and it's only about the size of a small shoe, child's shoe practically. A little bit bigger than that, but a child's shoe. Take 12-year-old shoe. All right, get shoe for a 12-year-old. It's about that size, roughly. That's, by law, the gun. That's the firearm. And that's what's regulated. Now, you can buy these in 80% complete. They've formed it and done much of the milling and whatever, but there's still about 20% that has to be carved out of there. And if you know how to run a milling machine, or if you're careful using a drilling machine, you can finish that lower receiver yourself. And when you do, it doesn't carry any serial numbers. It's completely legal, and it is apparently not subject to regulation by alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I have one of those. I was working with a friend of mine who was a machinist. And then he got tangled up with some other things. He was teaching me a little about it, and I was on the verge. But day is coming when I will mill out a lower receiver. I'll drill that thing out myself, and I'll put the parts in there, and I'll have a rifle that, in theory, can't be regulated by the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. So we'll watch and see. And I'm certainly not the only one who's doing it. This is something.
I went through that. I bought a one back with Clinton. They had on that ban. Bring in FNFALs, but they had been sawed in half, and they'd saw the lower receiver in half, so you had to replace that lower receiver and take it apart and rebuild it. And I did that, and that was a really fine weapon. I had to get rid of it before I came down here, of course, but boy, I sure did like that thing. Look, I was looking on Drudge, and we're talking about Cyprus. One of the headlines under the New Zealand is planning appropriations now.
I mean, it just, that's the point here. Everyone needs to be a little, where is your money safe? Which bank is going to guarantee that they won't seize your money to bail out whoever it is needs bailing out? I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We're here with Roger Sales. We will be back in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver needs, give Melody Cederstrom a call, 1-800-375-4188. Where were we, Roger, before we broke for the commercials? You were talking about...
I don't know. I've been dwelling while we were away on this Feinstein thing and this fact that this is going to fail in the Senate. You know, and we've alluded to this in the past, that this is a blueprint. It comes from the 1929 Communist International white papers and the four stages that they have used ever since, according to Brigadier General Benton Parton. This isn't according to Roger, that they've used in every country they've taken over since that was finally approved in 1929. It was brought up initially in 1919, but that organization only meets every 10 years, so it wasn't okayed until 1929. And the third stage is called the period of escalating violence. And as they get out of the third stage and move into the fourth stage, according to their blueprint and plan, accomplish by the end of phase three is they have to get rid of the death penalty and they have to get the guns. And obviously they've not been able to do this here, and the rest of their agenda is absolutely unraveling on them, especially the financial stuff. Thank you, God, and thank you, Internet. And it's going to be real interesting. I think you can see why, when you put that into perspective, the huge push with Sandy Hook, and it looks like it's a totally doctored Hollywood deal. Yesterday, by the way, did you see, Al, that they found his 4-foot-wide, 7-foot-long spreadsheet in his bedroom 4 months later?
No, I don't know what you're even talking about.
The cops have announced they found Lanza's spreadsheet. It was 4 feet wide and 7 feet long. Now everybody has a printer like that, and it chronicles all of the gun incidents that have happened and the casualties and fatalities and all that stuff. But they didn't find it in his bedroom, back in December. They found it in March.
Well, you know, these things, it's really, they're busy. And 4 foot by 7 foot, it's easy to overlook something like that. After all, it was just a mass murder they were investigating, so hard to say. And how would the average cop know what it was? I'm not sure that can the average cop read, Roger? It's not, you know, they are recruited frequently for low IQ. So if they looked at it, this just has some funny markings on it. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or false, Roger, but I speculate about it. One of the things that disturbs me most about government, again, they have become shameless in their abuse of the American people. It's like this, finding this evidence a couple months after the fact. It's not like they found a hair. And they just think, how could anybody be so stupid as to say, oh, we can claim we found this now. And the American people, they'll never suspect it's a fraud. How can they be that dumb? How can they be that disrespectful? I keep saying, if you're going to lie to me, at least give me lies that I could believe. These people don't have enough respect for me to even tell me lies that are believable, and it bothers me, Roger. I expect good lies. They're going to give me lies. Give me good lies. Give me lies that I can believe in, not this nonsense. We've got a report here. Of course, we've got a new pope.
I'm back.
Jesuit from Argentina.
Sally, so lo siento.
What happened, Roger? Were you missing for a moment?
No, the net just went down for a minute. What I was going to say was this. What really concerns me as this desperation, which I think people can read between the lines and see here, overcomes them and gets more intense. We know that they have no scruples, no morals, no ethics. They're totally Machiavellian. The ends totally justify the means. And desperate people do desperate things.
Yeah, I understand. How far are they ready to push? Because assuming they're at the end of their rope, how far are they willing to push to avoid what may be coming? You know, these people are really risking their lives to betray this nation. They are engaged in treason. And the average person isn't aware of that, isn't hot about that yet, but the day could come when many of the people sitting in Congress, in the Senate, in the White House, and federal courts, they are certainly eligible to be charged with treason. Whether they'd be convicted, we can debate that, but some of them would be. They're risking their lives to try this, and they have to understand that. And that being
they
the case,
understand it.
They, that being the case, they have to be willing to do anything in order to save their skins.
Well, so, you know, they hadn't been building all these underground cities and everything, which I think are documented plenty enough for us to assume that they're there. They haven't been doing all that just as an exercise to be spending black budget money.
Well, I understand. We live in interesting times. It gets more interesting all the time. One of the things that's important, talked about, wrote about it recently, wrote an article about it, the Pew Research Center. They did a poll recently, and they discovered that 53% of the American people feel personally threatened. That was their language. 53% feel personally threatened by the government right now. 73% of the people do no longer trust the government. That means that we are in the majority. We have thought for years that we are kind of like an extremist group. All right, we're out there on the, you know, maybe the cutting edge, maybe the lunatic fringe, but we've thought in terms of, well, the ideas we have and we embrace these attitudes are a minority, and we're trying to let the public know. Public knows. 3 out of 4 people don't trust the government right now, and a little over 1 out of 2 feel personally threatened. Government must be aware of those statistics far more than that's news to you and me in the last couple of weeks. But government, I'll bet, has been watching it all along. They know the doors are closing. How much distrust can they sow before people finally say, vote all? Don't just vote them out. Indict them all.
Did you see this article? It was just the other day. I was going to send it out, and I didn't. Collins, the female senator from Maine, had some sort of the luncheons that they put on there in D.C., and Obama came. I guess she's a Republican, right? And Obama attended, and it was lobster, catered lobster, obviously a top end. And Obama couldn't eat because his taster wasn't
working. Yeah, I saw that. Simply amazing. Amazing. It's a woman speaking about this, and it's hard to say, did she misspeak, or was she simply, she knows what's going on, and she was naive enough where she could make that revelation. She didn't realize what she was saying, I don't think. Obama, it must be, he must think that somebody I wonder if Obama has intelligence from the CIA to indicate that somebody poisoned Chavez down in Venezuela. Well, you don't suppose they have any inside information on that, do you?
No, and I'm sure they don't have any. Langley knows nothing about
just
that.
Just rumors. It would only be rumors. That would be as far as it could go. But do you suppose he's so impressed by rumors that Chavez may have been poisoned? That now he won't eat anything unless somebody tastes it for him?
Well, I mean, you know, it's their preferred method. We're going back to Rome now, man, okay?
It's like a child, and you've got to have, the taster's got to come in like a mother and say, num, num, good, and take the little spoon and kind of taste it, and then feed it to open the hangar, and we're going to fly the airplane in. You see what I'm saying here, Roger?
Yeah,
we
man,
do have a couple of callers. I think we got a couple of callers. Let's see if we can get somebody on the line here. Who's on the line?
Bring them on.
Who's on the line?
This is Dave from Michigan.
Hello, Dave. How you doing?
Hey, this is another Dave from Michigan.
Okay.
I always enjoy listening to your conversations. And, Al, I used to listen to you. I think it was on your own program when your conversations with Dennis Craig.
Yeah.
And,
at nighttime.
Came by at 11 o'clock here. Question I have for you is that I used to think your theories were kind of nutty, but the more I listen,
right,
the more I agree with them.
Get away from them.
What's that?
I still think they're kind of nutty, but I can't get away from them. I keep seeing evidence. It's like, you know, damn, I think it's fake. Okay. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not a man of means. I live in a depressed area of Michigan here. I can barely pay my electric bill. I'd love to have a copy of Roger's book, but I kind of want to know, where do you start with those things? I know we each come to it by a different path, but I'm beginning to understand.
I don't know. It's so much of this is circular. You learn one thing, you learn something at noon, and it takes you to 3 o'clock, and then to 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, and next thing you know, you're back to noon again. And much of it is circular in a sense. I don't know where you start, but you must persist. And in fact, when you do start, I don't think you can stop.
Dave, let me just say something about my book, and I wrote this for people like you, okay?
Yeah.
And it's a very complicated subject. I've said it before. What they've done is very simple. How they've done it is very complicated. And that book is my story. And it's from when I started, and somebody came up to me in 1992 and said, income tax is illegal. I got a videotape, and I said, I'll watch it. And it goes all the way, and it progresses on my path and how I stumbled through this and what it led to. And then the entire, from the second half of the book, is really the legal argument. Now, I didn't write that legal argument. I wrote the basis of it. My teachers rewrote that and edited it for me. And I'm going to tell you what, and I'm telling you this sincerely, the first time I read what they wrote, I cried. That legal argument in that book is brilliant. It's brilliant.
I hear you. Okay. So where do I obtain a copy of that book?
Go to thebookshelf.us. The bookshelf, spelled exactly like it sounds, .us, like United States. It's not .com or any of the other ones. It's .us, and go through there, and you'll find it there.
Okay, and how can I get a hold of Alfred? I don't have a computer. I don't have TV, satellite. I got nothing but a shortwave radio and a crummy cell phone.
Well, if you're passing through Richland, Oregon, you can – pick up a loudspeaker or something, a bullhorn, and holler, Al, are you there? And I'll come out. If I hear you, I'll come out. Other than that, you can write to Alfred Addis at Care of General Delivery, Richland.
Okay. Richland?
Yeah.
Okay.
The state of Oregon.
Zip code.
The state of Oregon. The United States of America. And if you really feel you need to use a zip code, put it in brackets and put it up alongside of Richland. Don't put it down at the bottom. Put it up alongside of Richland, the city of Richland, and in brackets, 97870.
Okay, that's Richland?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen. I always enjoy listening to you.
All right, Dave, thank you.
Good luck up there, Dave.
We are down about 2 minutes left right now. So if we have one more caller to squeeze something in, Frank says we have callers, plural. Do we still have callers, Frank, or was that it? Frank is not responding, so I'm going to assume that was the end of the caller queue for today. What else we got, Roger? All right.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
All right. Who's here? Who are we talking to?
I just wanted to Bruno from Connecticut. I just wanted to give you a quick thing. I used one of your law. I went to a pharmacy CEU, and I used one of your arguments with one of the big-shot lawyers there. And I told him we were talking about the
manner of the animal.
Yeah, well, I told him, I said, that there's only three laws. One is I harm you. Two, I harm your property. Three, I do the I harm your constitutional rights. And then I said everything else is statute. And he said, no, everything, statutes all carry the force of law. And I said, well, they'll call them minbas, but not really the force of the law. And he went off. And then he said, interesting, when he went to talk, he used Voltaire. And he said, first let us define our terms. And then he used, Alfred, your man or other animals, because it was a pharmacy meeting, so it was about drugs. But it was a very interesting little conversation I had with him.
He brought up, the attorney brought up man or other animals, or you did?
He did. He brought up, he said drugs. He defined drugs, and he brought up man or other animals as a definition of a drug. And that's what it is.
I know. That's what it says in the federal law and also the Texas law. That's exactly right. But I'll tell you we're going to have to turn you loose because we're down to our last 20 seconds. Got to say goodbye to the audience. Appreciate your call. We'll have to talk to you another time.
Next week, I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, so would I, but... Again, we're out of time today, Roger. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival. I'll be back with Melody Cedarstrom mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye, folks.
Hasta luego.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money.
money, 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 always money.